Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on August the 13th, 2015, in the evening. And as I'm sure you already know, in the most recent Orioles baseball game, they got no hit by Seattle's Hisashi Iwakuma, and it sucked. And now they are two games back of the second wildcard spot, and they're just having a bad August, and really, they haven't been good for the last 2 months. It feels kind of like the season's slipping away. So in honor of that no-hitter hangover we are currently experiencing, I'm joined, as always, by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex Conway. Alex, how's it going?
Pretty bad. Pretty bad, Mark. On top of watching the end of an Orioles no-hitter, I've had to move from one house to another, and it's just, it's all piling on, and none of it is good.
The Orioles had gone the first 12 days of August without winning or losing consecutive games. It was win one, lose one, from August the 1st through August the 12th. Of course, they finally break that streak with two losses in a row.
Yep.
Getting no hit and just looking pathetic against Hisashi Iwakuma. And Iwakuma's not like, yeah, it's not like if they got no hit by, like, freaking Drew Hutchison or whatever, who's literally, like, disaster against every team other than the Orioles. You know, yeah. He's had a respect in the 3 years since he's been in the big leagues. And so, and I mean, this is his fourth season. I believe it was his 88th start. Although it was his first ever complete game, which I think is pretty embarrassing.
Yeah.
But
I mean, Iwakuma's been, he's like struggled this year somewhat, but he's been a pretty good pitcher before.
Like his career big league ERA, 596 in the third innings. He's got a 3.17 ERA. Now, I guess a little of that is okay. He's in Safeco for half his games, but like, you know, that's not a terrible dude. That's not like, you know, freaking Philip Humber is exactly who I was thinking about. Exactly. Yeah. That's not like
he's got a perfect game.
Yeah, it's not.
He was DFA'd later that year.
It's not like you're getting that, but I mean, to me, and I wrote about this on Camden Chat, Alex, the quote from Adam Jones was, well, he threw a lot of strikes. You can't cry about it. And then, like, 20 minutes later, there was a quote by one of the ESPN stat guys, a tweet, where he was saying, oh, yeah, that's the lowest strike percentage Hisashi Iwakuma has ever thrown in a game in his career.
Great.
So, I mean, really, that tells you a lot about how they got no hit. Because even after getting no hit, Adam Jones thought, man, Hisashi Iwakuma threw a lot of strikes. And the actual stat was from David Schoenfeld on ESPN. Said the stat was that Hisashi Iwakuma threw only 40.5% of his pitches in the strike zone, the lowest rate of any of his 88 career starts. That's how you get no hit, because there were 19 swinging strikes. So basically, one out of seven pitches they chased outside of the strike zone and swung and missed.
Yeah.
That's how you get no hit.
Pretty much.
I mean, and that's the Orioles. It's really felt like it could happen to them any time the last 2 months.
Yeah. I mean, it was like that. It's a 10-game road trip where they just lost in 10 innings after coming back the night before. It's a getaway day. It's not a good combo,
like, even,
for a lot of effort.
Even when things are going well for them, they're a bunch of hackers.
Yeah.
They are just aggressive, and they're looking to swing and hit home runs. And sometimes that works out great. And sometimes, well, getting no hit by Hisashi Iwakuma is the other sometimes there.
Yeah. And it's frustrating.
Like, the Orioles in the aggregate are not a bad hitting team. They are, let's see, what is this? They have scored the sixth most runs out of any American League team, which isn't, you know, the top, but that's not terrible. They have the fifth highest OPS of any team. In fact, they're tied with Kansas City for OPS by the hitters as a team. Of course, Kansas City, having sold their souls to Satan, is giving up. Actually, really, they're not even giving up that many fewer runs. It's just the Orioles, you know, the one-run game magic is just not there. I believe they're 15-19 in one-run contests.
Yeah.
And it's not even like because their bullpen is bad is the reason why they're blowing one-run games. They're just, sometimes they're just not hitting.
Yeah. They just, like, they don't hit at the right time, and then I think one of the bigger issues this year, just starting pitching just hasn't been there. A combination of sort of guys falling way back, pitching much worse, and a worse defense overall. And it just hasn't been good from that standpoint either.
Right. You've had two starting pitchers who've been okay to good with their results so far, which is Wei-Yin Chen and Ubaldo Jimenez. And
Jimenez has been up and down the second
Jimenez
half.
Jimenez has
crazy.
Been up and down for sure. But those are the guys with the ERAs presently under 4. And then Gonzalez is just not whatever this year is just not happening.
Yeah.
And Tillman, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Tillman, he was rolling until...
Yeah, did the ankle injury get him, or did he just experience a regression that he was always going to experience? I don't know.
Yeah. He made some... I mean, Tillman... And I get off on a tangent, but, you know, this is what we do. Get off on tangents. He's been doing a little things differently the last couple of starts. I mean, I wrote about it, and there was a good piece over on Fangraphs where Eno Saris actually interviewed him about it. He's been throwing a sinker more. He moved to the other side of the pitching rubber. He's throwing his changeup, like, in a different way. You know, it was like... Stuff like that seems pretty interesting, and, you know, hopefully that last one was just a little rust, but, you know, he could be an interesting to watch going forward if you're trying to find something to watch in the season of despair, is how Tillman pitches going forward, because he's still under contract for a couple more years.
He is. He's got 2 more years after this. I don't think the Orioles are going to end up extending him after this performance, nor should they.
I mean, maybe this is the time to extend him.
If you could get him on a low price. But
I have felt
since the beginning of the season that the Rick Porcello extension probably torpedoed any chance of Tillman ever extending.
Yeah, I mean, ugh. It's good.
Like, that set the market right there, probably. And he's stunk. So it's not like the price...
Well, yes and no. I mean, the thing with Porcello is how young he is. He's only like 26 or something.
Well,
Tillman's gonna be like 30 plus by free agency, right? It's gotta be.
I suppose that was a contributing factor. In fact, Porcello turns 27 on December the 27th, but he's sitting on a 5.81 ERA. Porcello is. So let's see, Tillman. By the time he is a free,
Tillman is younger than I thought. He's 27 now. This is age 27 season.
Okay, and he's got 2 more years coming, so he'll be. I guess he'll be playing his age 30 season in his first year of whatever contract he gets beyond this.
Yeah. I don't know. Tillman seems like the kind of guy they would re-sign and that would stay, but I mean, it just seems likely that he's not going to sign.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what he does the rest of this year and next year, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, like, the Orioles' rotation has been a problem this year, but I look at it, and it's like, well, what could they have done? Okay, they should have had Kevin Gausman in there from the get-go, yes. But,
yeah.
I really think it was, well, they couldn't get rid of any of the other guys.
The semi-obvious move may have been to trade Bud Norris at the height of his value. Because he was going to make $9 million.
It's easy to say that in hindsight, because
yeah,
he was
but,
a solid starter last year.
Yeah, but also, you know, he pitched Game 3 of the DS for him.
Yeah, like, I don't know, I think they were
handcuffed. He pitched whatever Game 3 of the ALCS, too, didn't he?
I believe that's right.
So, I mean, like, he was your Game 3 starter last year, and you're attempting to win again, and you're just going to... You know, I'm not sure what they could have gotten for Bud Norris, even at the height of Bud Norris's value. He was, like, barely above He was like five. I think he had an ERA plus last year of like 105 or something. He's like 5% above league average. Like, what do you? You're not probably not going to get much more than you got for Jim Johnson.
Right. I felt like
Maybe a little more,
through the
but like nothing
offseason and spring
serious.
training, the most tradable guy was probably Gonzalez because he's had decent performance and he would have multiple years of control.
Yeah, he would be another one, but he's one you want to like the same. You want to keep him around
Right, but the fact
multiple
that
years
he
of
has
control.
multiple years of control, yeah. I mean,
Yeah. And he was, I think he had the best ERA last year on the team. I think he had the highest ERA plus.
So, I mean, like, there was nothing they could do there. Like, there was, but there wasn't. You know, like.
It's like, yeah, it's just you can make those moves, but they would seem like there's a definite reason to do it. Like Norris would make sense monetarily, Gonzalez would make sense because he'd bring the most value back. But like, you just won 96 games with those guys. Are you definitely gonna do that? And you don't know anything about Jimenez. You don't know what he's gonna do. You don't know if someone's gonna get injured, and they aren't making that much money. I mean, like, would have been nice to have Bud Norris's $9 million to put somewhere else, but at the end of the day, for a starting pitcher, I mean, that's not a lot.
I mean, and just kind of on the same general topic, the Orioles outfield situation, the corner outfield has been a sort of, well, I mean, none of these guys had like the kind of track record the Orioles starting rotation did last year, but you could reasonably think, okay, even if you don't know which two of these five guys will emerge as at least okay baseball players. You could feel reasonably confident that like two out of five of
Or at
the
least
crew
one.
you've collected of like Alejandro Diaz, Delmon Young, David Lowe, Travis Snyder, and whatever,
Steve
Steve
Pierce.
Pierce. You can feel I felt like it wasn't crazy to go into the year thinking, okay, a couple of these guys will at least, not spend the whole year on DFA watch because they're just so bad. You're literally counting the days. Like Alex, I'm sure you recall this. The right before the Orioles DFA'd Chris Parmalee, the Baltimore Sun guys had reported that it was going to be Travis Snyder getting DFA'd like that day.
Yeah.
That's what they said. That's what they said the Orioles sources were, and then at the end it ended up being, oh, they DFA'd Chris Parmalee instead. Like, how screwed are you when there's two guys you could DFA either one, no one would miss them.
Yeah, and then
And then
both
you
of them
had to
ended up getting
DFA the other
DFA'd.
one a week later anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Snyder was, I don't even know. He never looked right.
You just
I mean,
watched him out there. There was this one. The one thing that will always stand out for me, the Travis Snyder, was one of those Rays game, Alex. Maybe you saw the GIF. I don't remember who exactly posted it. I put it in one of my game recaps. There was a GIF of him, and he was just swinging at a pitch. And he swung at it so late, he was swinging as the ball was already in the catcher's glove.
It was Tim Burke, the Deadspin guy. He created the GIF. I remember I retweeted it because I was just like, this is. Because I've been talking with people on Twitter about just how slow his bat looks all year. It's just
I
bad.
think it was
But you
Luke
just.
Jackson on Twitter who
Yeah.
coined saying Snyder is what you get when you have slider bat speed and they can't recognize a slider.
Yeah. And. Yeah. And, Chris, it was Chris Boos, right? He had a pretty good breakdown of sort of like. There's clearly something wrong with Snyder's swing this year. He's just like way out of whack with something like not making contact on pitches in the zone.
So I mean,
It's
there's plenty to get mad at. Well, all these guys sucked. Well, okay, they could have signed Nelson Cruz, blah blah blah. They could have signed Nick Markakis, blah blah blah. But like, the path they took wasn't a terrible one as far as what you could expect to get from them. It's just none of them have delivered even close to okayish production, and
No, not at all.
that's why
And
the
like you said,
DFA wagon just keeps rolling.
there was five of them plus Chris Parmalee, Nolan Rimmel, and a couple other guys. So you got like seven, maybe seven candidates, and you needed probably like one,
You really needed
or
one of them
maybe
to
two.
stick and one of them to just be like,
A
good
platoon
enough to be a platoon. Exactly. And zero.
and
Batting
zero.
zero.
Like all of them hit the bottom end of what you thought, your projection of what they could give you.
It might even have been below what you would have projected they would give you.
Yeah, that's hard to do. That's
Like, you couldn't have assembled such a bad collection on purpose.
pretty much. I mean, it's
Of course, Deaza is frustrating because, well, they DFA'd him and then he's gone on to Boston and he has an 851 OPS for the Red Sox, but, like, he just
just he
looks so
had to,
bad.
he looked terrible.
So bad.
And I think he's probably fall, I think he's fallen off a cliff a bit lately. Which makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's just a dude who needs to get, like, kicked around every 2 months, and then he has, like, a hot month, and then he's gone again. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
687 OPS over the last 28 days for Deaza. Not
That's
counting, not counting Thursdays.
more like him. Well, yeah, he was like touted as the savior in Boston when they still had like an outside shot at not being terrible.
Yeah, and so, I mean, like, they couldn't have done other than what they did. I mean, they could have, but they couldn't have. It was just like, I think it was a strategy they were locked into.
I don't know. You could have. There are a bunch of the moves of like getting rid of some of the guys on the roster that they've gotten rid of, but they make sense on their own, but it doesn't seem like something that they were kind of cursed by their winning in a way, they had to.
Right, they couldn't just chuck guys from the team that won 96 games.
And even if you, I mean, you could say, oh, well, they should have known a smart teams would do that, stuff like that, but there's almost something to, someone, I mean, there were clearly players were upset that Nick Markakis was not re-signed. And if you start like kicking off other key
Right,
contributors from a team that they were just a part
you're
of.
basically putting pressing the dynamite plunger.
I think Pete, you can think of it like a video game, but you're still talking about people and you're trying to, maybe you're trying to sign Manny Machado to an extension and you take away five of his teammates from his division winning team, and I don't know.
It doesn't send a good message there. And
No,
like
it
you said,
doesn't
they
at
were
all.
clearly upset about the Markakis thing. We kind of got the griping through spring training and Adam Jones made his vague tweet in January about, well, next time I'm going to cut out the middleman, and still nobody knows what that was about. Chris Davis was like, well, we got to see if the Orioles are going to commit to the future before I want to commit to the Orioles.
I
Whatever
think even like
else.
Darren O'Day had mentioned some like said something about it. Like it clearly perturbed all of them. And you talk about like Bud Norris is a big part of that team last year. Like Tommy Hunter is another guy like maybe you could have gotten rid of, but he's a big part of that team last year.
Yeah, I don't know, like, yeah, maybe I'm just sitting here and I'm just like a Dan Duquette apologist, an Orioles apologist, but, like, I don't know what else they could have done that would have seemed like a good move at the time and turned out to be a good move. Like, you boil it down, it's like, well, now knowing what we know now, of course we should say, well, man, they should have signed Nelson Cruz no matter what.
I can't believe Cruz. I mean, his two best years of his career have been the past two. That's pretty crazy for a 35-year-old.
Or even just say, okay, you know what? We're gonna make Markakis an Oriole for life. What's $10 million between friends? And I mean, I don't know how, but he's got his freaking .372 on base percentage for the Braves this year.
Part of me was thinking, and I don't know if this is actually the case, but part of me was thinking just like, what else is in that Braves lineup? Like Freddie Freeman was out for so long, like why not pitch around Nick Markakis? That was part of me thinking that's why his walk rate was way up this year, but
I mean, maybe, but you look at that and it's like, well, that would look good in the Orioles lineup. But then
I mean
how could you have predicted, okay, he's going to go to Atlanta and then he's going to have a BABIP 30 points above his career number and 50 points above what he's put up the last 2 seasons? Like, you can't bet $11 million a year on that.
No. And I think They could really use a player like Mark Akins, kind of like an annoying little slap hitter guy.
Who plays
But
every day and isn't terrible in the field, although he would have no
yeah.
range, but you know, he is what he is out there.
Yeah. They could use a player like that, but paying one $44 million when they're 31 years old with a bad neck is like, you know, that's something you should have sitting in your minor leagues ready to pay $500,000 for. But they don't because they're the Orioles.
They don't because they're the Orioles, is a great way of putting it. It's dire down there.
It's not great.
There's no real prospect position player in the high minors. There's a couple guys who are just like kind of oldish guys who are performing decently, which is how we ended up with Chris Parmalee and, for that matter, Nolan Reimold on the roster this year.
Yeah.
But there's no, like, okay, and like the Yankees have just today called up one of their untouchable guys, Greg Bird, who was actually a high school teammate of Kevin Gausman. Grandview High School in Colorado. I think they overlapped 3 out of 4 years together or something like that. And so, you know, he was like untouchable at the trade deadline for them, but he was actually like a top 100 on all the prospect lists guy. So they're getting desperate. They're calling up their, you know, one of their top hitting prospect guy to give kind of a spell to Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez, who both have been slumping, I believe, for the last month or so.
Which makes sense.
It's because they're old.
Yeah.
So now they can call up a 22-year-old guy to play, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 games a week, or maybe they'll play more. I don't know. But like the Orioles don't have that. They're calling up Henry Arrudia and probably Steve Clevenger, because it turns out Matt Wieters is going to have to get his leg amputated. Now that, you know, that was an exaggeration, obviously, but I mean, you kind of knew when Wieters got yanked from what was that, the Tuesday game?
Yeah.
The same time Tillman got bombed out of the game, they just pulled Wieters right there.
I'm done with the Orioles' like positive initial diagnosis of the situation.
Like, they're sitting there, and the beat writers are relaying quotes like, "Well, you know, Matt Wieters could probably be available as a pinch hitter in Wednesday's game, or you know, he could be emergency catcher. He's just the problem is running." It's like, dude, give me a break. The only reason they didn't DL him on Wednesday is because they were literally unable to get Steve Clevenger from Durham, North Carolina to Seattle, Washington in time.
Yeah.
They couldn't do it because of the timing of, okay, the injury happened at like 11 o'clock at night Eastern, and the next game was at 3:40 Eastern, and he had to get across the country.
Yeah.
That's the only reason he's not on the disabled list right now.
Pretty much. And they'll, yeah, whatever, retro-dated or acted, or I can't even think of this stupid word right now. Retroactive. Back to, they'll do it. It's going to happen. I mean, I don't like saying that. But
Alex, we just spent considerable time talking about moves the Orioles had to make. They had to bring back Matt Wieters. They couldn't just say, oh, you know, we're going to non-tender this guy. He's hurt, and we don't know when he's going to play again. We don't know if he's going to be good. Like, they couldn't do it. They could have, but they couldn't have. And it's basically the worst-case scenario.
Basically.
You know, he's got he didn't play until whatever day. And they basically have to cover for him with this continuing, he still can't catch in back-to-back games, that it's been 2 months and he's been back.
I mean, if you're talking like worst case scenario for Wieters this year, it's pretty much been it. He's hit fine. He's got overall 106 OPS plus.
Would like That's it like, if the on-base percentage was higher, but it could be worse.
Yeah.
But he's only played in 46 games.
Yeah. And he hasn't played for whatever, you know, almost over. He didn't play for almost over a year, and he hasn't been able to play on back-to-back days.
And now he's probably going to hit the DL with a hamstring strain. Maybe that keeps him out for 2 weeks. Maybe it keeps him out for 3 weeks. Oh, he's only caught 32 games, by the way. He's played in 46, but he's only caught 32. So it's like, well, like that's $8.3 million they're spending on Wieters that they really couldn't not spend, but you're getting no, like, not much return on that. And they might not even be able to get, well, you know, you probably entered the season thinking, well, at least they'll be able to qualifying offer him.
Yeah.
2 months ago, I think on this podcast, I was like, well, people that say they're not going to qualifying offer him are crazy. But then I've watched him for 2 months, and I've changed my mind, and now I'm not so sure that it's a good idea.
I like that. If he goes on the DL and has to admit, like, I don't see, unless he just comes back in September and just hits, like...
Right, well, like, what if he bats, like, 500 and on base is 650 and slugs 800 in September? Yeah. Then great. It's great for all concerned, because the Orioles will have a great player for September.
The fact that he hasn't been able to catch on back-to-back days, now he's going to go on the DL probably, it's just... I don't see... I mean, the only hope I would have is that Scott Boras hates the qualifying offer so much that he would just tell Weeders to turn it down.
It would be a surprise if a Boras guy was the first one to do that, but...
But what's it going to be this year?
I saw Buster Olney say it's probably going to be $15.7 to $16
million. Yeah. That's a lot of money for a guy who just came off Tommy John surgery, hasn't been able to catch on back-to-back days,
right.
just strained his hamstring, and has 105 OPS plus.
When we're sitting here and we've just talked about all the bad payroll bets the Orioles ended up making for this year, if you're thinking, okay, Matt Wieters, we're going to qualifying offer him, and suddenly he's taking $16 million next year,
that's
a tough bet, man. That's a tough bet to make.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Somebody could believe in Wieters and giving them a multi-year offer. It'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting. The fact that they didn't qualifying offer Markakis last year was interesting to me. And, like, I don't know if they did it because they thought he would accept it or if they did it to, like, not screw him over.
I have held to that second theory, Alex. I have no reason to believe it other than it feels right.
I'm with you.
Because
I think they knew Markakis is, like, I think they had, like, a good enough idea of his market. I think it was just like, all right, we don't want to, like, you know, we want to be friendly in negotiation.
Yeah, because I feel like they could have said, okay, we're going to qualifying offer Nick Markakis. He's not going to take it. No one is going to want Nick Markakis if he's – well, I don't want to say no one because the Mets freaking signed Michael Kadire for – you know. But it would have depressed his market and it would have reduced the amount of money he could get. And then reducing his money, maybe the Orioles could have come in and signed him. But I think they could have done that, and I think they chose not to, not because they thought he would take it, but because they were doing him a solid.
Yeah, I agree. And I think part of it is they thought they were going to re-sign him, but once they saw his neck, they were not gonna be about that.
Yeah, I think the fourth year became a problem once they saw the neck. And I mean, he had neck surgery like before the ink was dry on his Braves contract.
Yeah, so I can't exactly blame them for that sentiment.
So I guess the thing that could be in the favor of Matt Wieters with the qualifying offer is who else is on the market? Well, here's the there's six names on the MLB trade rumors pending free agents for catchers. Okay, I'm going to read them off to you. Matt Wieters is one of them. We've got Alex Avila, Chris Iannetta, Dianer Navarro, Brian Peña, AJ Pierzynski. Those are your free agents.
Yeah.
Much like Chris Davis is really the only free agent first baseman.
Yeah, pretty much.
Maybe you could sort of say Mike Napoli. But Matt Wieters is like the only catcher. It's like, okay, Alex Avila is also young. I don't know what his story is really.
I feel like he has a reputation of being pretty good. I don't know if that's true, though.
Well, his dad's like the assistant GM, acting GM in Detroit now, so that probably doesn't hurt his
chances of getting signed there.
Dude is sitting on a 586 OPS right now.
Yeah, so...
That's having a rough walk here.
I don't know. Maybe Wieters looks at that and says... And Duquette looks at that and says, well...
Good luck, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean...
The thing is, almost, if I... if I was a player, I would trust Boris to get me multiple years. But then you look at like Steven Drew and Kendrys Morales, both got screwed.
Yeah, it didn't like wreck their career earnings. Well, it did wreck their career earnings. It didn't wreck their entire career earnings, but it took like their careers were derailed for probably 2 years because of that. The way that played out for them.
But then you just say, yeah, the Michael Kadire thing is the most shocking. Because it's like, that was the weirdest one. Weirdest, like, worst player ever, probably, to get one.
Why did the Rockies offer him one, and then the Mets, why did they sign him right away?
Signed him immediately. I don't know. That was a weird one. And his numbers look good because he was hitting in Coors Field.
Yeah, he had a 955 OPS last year. That's pretty good. But would you like to guess what his home OPS was?
11-something.
It was 1.255 at home last year.
Yeah. So, and then you move him to Citi Field.
Now, that was only in 20 games, I guess. What? He qualifying offered him, he only played 49 games. What the heck?
He only played 49 games?
He played 49 games last year.
I don't know. Maybe the Rockies just knew the Mets were going to sign him or something.
That's really weird. And then, shock of shocks, he goes over to Citi Field, and he coming into today was batting .253, .304, .380 on the season. Yeah. You gave up a draft pick for that, like, and you're paying him $21 million over 2 years. So, I mean, you never know. Like, $21 million is better than $15 million, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know about Wieters.
Yeah. It's going to have to be just something where Duquette reads the market. It's kind of like the same thing where, like, if it was, like we were talking about with Markakis, you know, some guys, the qualifying offer, just they're good enough. It doesn't depress their market all that much. But he's kind of on that line where, like, if you got it, didn't take it, it's one of those things where, like, it sort of destroys his market a bit.
I mean, Wieters, you know, if he just kind of scuffles or is hurt the rest of the season, like, you know, now you're talking, well, you know, he's going to have to take a one-year pillow contract kind of situation.
Yeah, it seems like that's, you know, maybe that's what he wants to do.
Like, if he's on a trajectory where he goes for, like, 1 year and $5 million just so he can get a better contract the second time around... I mean, you can't put $16 million on the table if they're already thinking, well, you know, we're probably going to get like 1 year and $7 million next year.
Yeah. It'll be interesting for Duquette or whoever is the GM.
I don't know if that Toronto saga is going to happen again. Whatever.
I don't know
let's
either.
Let's not even worry about it. I'll worry about it in December.
Yeah. I guess Dave Dombrowski was connected with it earlier today, I think I saw.
I have seen a lot of things thrown around about the Tigers, Dave Dombrowski. Well, former Tigers, Dave Dombrowski. I don't know. Whoever knows with any of that stuff. It's like all that stuff that's getting leaked at that level is like one side is doing it with a specific motive.
Pretty much.
It's like when John Heyman is tweeting out in the off season about what teams are interested in the Scott Boras client of the year.
Yeah.
And well, there's a mystery team in the negotiations.
I love that.
Like,
that's my favorite.
Gee, who told him that?
Yeah, it's definitely Scott Boras.
Who is feeding him this information? I wonder. You'll see it with Chris Davis. You'll see it with Chen possibly. You know, whoever's the big guy of the year, that's what's going to happen. You know, the Yankees are doing their due diligence. Red Sox are doing their due diligence. Why? Because they're the teams with money.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Yeah. I still think Atlanta's kind of a natural landing spot for Wieters. They have some money. They need a catcher. They're trying to compete in 2017.
He went to Georgia Tech connection.
Yeah. And, That fit makes sense. So it makes, like, maybe they just want him so bad that they'll give him a 3-year deal if you throw a qualifying offer on him or something. I don't know. I don't know the market as well as Dan Duquette does, probably.
Yeah, Dan Duquette knows more than us. That's true. All we can do is sit here and say, what the heck? I don't know. But it's going to be – he's probably going to need some Tums.
Yeah.
Some antacids.
If he offers it to him, those, I think it's like 3 days.
It's going
to
be a tense 3 days. Because I mean,
days.
If you offer Wieters, man, and he takes it, man, that's like 15% of the payroll next year, and you don't even know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that would be...
That's your Bud Norris and your Wieters this year bet combined.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Like, that's sucking up all the money you thought you might get to spend on a real free agent.
Yeah. That would be a ballsy move.
It is. I don't know. I mean, I don't.
I don't want to be. I don't.
What could
yeah.
they have done? What could they have done except make a desperation trade for Gerardo Parra, the only outfielder they could get without parting with Hunter Harvey, Dylan Bundy, Kevin Gausman, or Michael freaking Givens? You're not serious about trading for somebody if Michael Givens is your untouchable guy. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. Like, I actually laughed when I saw that because...
Yeah. I was like, what? Well, what do you mean? He's a right-handed relieving prospect.
Like, he looks like an interesting guy. He has performed well in his small big league sample. You know, he's got the funky three-quarters slot. He's got good velocity from that slot. I'm sure they had him penciled into next year's bullpen and apparently the rest of this year's bullpen. But, like, you know, just hypothetically, if it was like the Tigers are coming around asking, okay, Orioles, you kept my man. You can have Yoenis Cespedes. You just got to give us Michael Givens. That's all. Like, if that happened, and they're like, no, Michael Givens is off the table, which I doubt it happened. You know, they were probably like, no, you got to give us Hunter Harvey, and then Duquette just, like, flipped the bird. But, like, if that happened, like, you can't say Michael Givens is untouchable, man. Come on.
No. The best thing he's ever going to be is a closer.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's probably not going to be that. So, it's just, yeah, that was dumb. And the Parra trade, I mean, he's been not great since they traded for him. Coming off of his career half season.
Who could have imagined, Alex? Who could have imagined that was going to happen?
I think I had more hope than you, but it was misplaced, I think.
Alex,
this point.
I wanted it to work. Like, I really did. And maybe it will end up not being a disaster, because maybe Zach Davies won't turn into what Jake Arrieta has turned into for the Cubs, and, you know, maybe Parra will rebound a bit more. Well, he probably will, because he's a better player than batting 196, 260, 304, which he's done through his first 11 Orioles games. But who could have imagined he was sitting on a 372 batting average on balls in play, which suddenly had him racking up the best season of his career? Who could have imagined that was going to not continue when he suddenly got traded to the Orioles?
Yeah, yeah. It seemed to be like some pretty decent underlying numbers and some of that, but a lot of it was BABIP, and once again, as soon as they come to the Orioles,
it looked like desperation to me that it was just like, man, all of these guys we have suck so much.
Yeah,
they had to try.
It was one of those things. Just like, okay, you can plug and play Parra every day.
Yeah. That's true.
And go from there, and then you can just sort of cycle through the rest of your guys, and hopefully, you know, you get some good performance on some days, which is what they've needed, but Parra's been so bad that he hasn't really provided that either.
Yeah, it's, that's...
He hasn't provided, like, the consistency at the plate.
Obviously,
and his fielding, it's been...
It's 11 games, but he had a 138 WRC+ with the Brewers, and... WRC plus is just one of these kind of new wave stats, but it basically normalizes your hitting into a number, and 100 is average. The higher above 100 you are, the better you are. The lower below 100, the worse you are. So what is that? Like 138, you're 38% better than the average hitter. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. His Orioles WRC plus is 49. Which means you are 51% worse than the average hitter.
which is pretty bad.
That's pretty bad.
Very bad.
Really, really, really bad. So that's 11 games. But it's not a good 11 games. And they, you know, they're sitting here and it's like feeling like the crucial juncture. We were talking a bit before we recorded, like, have we passed by the 2013 Diamondbacks series, which was what really made it feel like to fans, okay, this thing isn't happening this year.
Pretty much.
Although, I mean,
yeah.
Like, what was that series? Every game, the bullpen blew.
Yeah, it was a 3 straight walk-offs they lost on, which is like kind of like getting no hit.
Just a total morale.
Feeling of despair.
In mid-August. That was the 12th, 13th, 14th of August, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, so basically a year ago, or 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah, that was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 12th, 13th, and 14th of August. And the Orioles ended that series 10 games above 500.
Wow, really?
Yeah, they were 65-55 after that disaster.
Wow. Yeah, like we were talking about, this just feels like a post-mortem at this point. It just feels like they're dead in the water. And they're 2 games out.
They're 2 games out of the second wild card spot.
There's a path you can create to make you think that they could get there, but what have you seen since the end of June that would indicate to you that that could happen? Obviously, like, you know, we were talking, oh, if they sweep Oakland and the Angels get swept, then they're in the wild card. Like, yeah.
To get to 90 wins, they would have to basically put up a .672 winning percentage for the rest of the season. That's like, it was like 33-16 or something like that for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It might have been even some. Yeah, I think that was it. It was like 33-16 for the rest of the season. Yeah, because that would get them to 90-72.
Yeah. And 90, I don't...
Maybe you don't need 90, maybe because this is like, you know, the wild card tier teams, you know, maybe it's like, okay, 87. Well, guess what? Now you need to go 30-20.
Yeah, which is still a really good record over 50 games.
Yeah.
And the only time they've done that, anything like that this year was June, when they went 18-5 against awful competition.
And August was supposed to be their month against awful competition again, and so far they're what, 5-6 or whatever the heck.
Yeah. And July just they had their chance at the end of June. If they just were consistent, then they just lost it immediately. Starting with that Rangers series, we lost 3 out of 4.
It's just been a mess, really. Like, when they were trying to chase the Twins in the wild card race, oh, they get swept by the Twins. And then it's like, wow, okay, now we're going to play the Yankees. We're going to get back in this division race. Now I get swept by the Yankees.
Yep.
And then it's like, oh, okay, we're out here. Gosh. We're going to play the Angels. We're chasing the Angels for that second wild card spot now. Lose 2 out of 3.
Yep. That Yankees sweep was another one for me where it's like, all right, this season seems...
Like, they started they were 4 games out. If they had won that series, they would have been 3 games out. That's great.
Yeah.
That's cool. 3 games out is cool. Of the division, too. So then you're kind of closer to the wild card as a fallback. And instead they got swept, and then at the end of that, they were 7 games out. So that's like, okay, forget the division, man. Just forget it.
Yeah, gone now.
And especially now that the Blue Jays, who, by the way, were in 4th place when they traded for Troy Tulowitzki. And what have they gone, like 14-1 since that trade? Like,
something stupid. Can we put out a bulletin to the league to stop giving away their good players to the Blue Jays?
Like, what was that trade to the Rockies, man? What did they? The Rockies got nothing.
They got like 2 okay prospects and Jose
and
Reyes.
Now you're stuck with Jose Reyes.
Yeah, and like the thought was, oh, he'll inflate his stats in Coors Field, and then we'll be able to flip them. Like, you think no one's going to notice that? Like, this isn't 1965.
At least the Tigers got, okay, Daniel Norris. You know, that's like a real prospect.
Yeah, the Tigers got more for David Price
than
they gave up for a year and a half of David Price.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a good deal by the Tigers. But yeah, and now the Blue Jays have Tulowitzki going on for like 3 or 4 years, just like Donaldson. A stupid Donaldson trade. Billy Bean. I mean, just Brett Laurie sucks. Why would you want him? Ugh. And now all the good hitters are just on the Blue Jays. That's infuriating. Because I hate them.
I have been talking to my friend and former co-site manager, who's still kind of the site lieutenant, Stacy Volkamer, about it. And we have collectively decided we do not want the Blue Jays to make it into the postseason, so their postseason drought continues. And our reasoning, even though we know that that would mean the Yankees are going to win the division, is that Yankees fans are what they are, and they're going to be what they are.
Yeah.
Whatever happens. But we want the Blue Jays fans to just continue on that. And some of that is Blue Jays fans on the internet have not been friendly to Camden Chat.
Well, I've even heard that from other places.
Like we have
people.
To ban more of them pretty much than anybody else that we have to ban. You know, it's, and then there was like a few years back. It was in fact, I think it was 2012. At that year, like Yahoo Sports did something where they like emailed all the SB Nation blogs, and they had like the blog manager write a thing about why it's good to be a fan of this team. And so, you know, Stacy wrote her thing about the Orioles, and it was like, well, you know, you get to go to Camden Yards, you got blah blah blah, you got blah blah blah, you got Buck Showalter, you got the warehouse, all this stuff. So the Blue Jays person, maybe it wasn't the SB Nation person for the Blue Jays. I really don't remember, but whoever wrote the thing for the Blue Jays, one of the things was the Ori lulls. And it's like, and the thing was, good thing about being a Blue Jays fan is, you know, no matter what, worse than you is the Orioles. And Stacy has been so offended by that ever since that there's basically... You add that to the ongoing from our childhood, Cito sucks, and you've got a new century's reason to dislike the Blue Jays. On top of the fact that Jose Bautista is a douchebag, and Edwin Encarnacion seems like kind of a douchebag, and they're just a collectively insufferable group of people who love to just make up feuds with teams. Screw those guys, man! Screw those guys!
Screw those guys. I'm done with them. And they try to take our GM.
And they've got Drew Hutchison with a freaking 11-2 record and a 5.26 ERA. What a joke.
Yeah, their offense is stupid.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's just...
They have the longest playoff drought in professional sports. And we would like that to continue.
Let's hope it's continuing.
Yeah, I don't think it will.
Probably they, not.
Like, everything has broken their way. It's crazy they're actually a game up. And, you know, a week ago, people were like, well, man, the Blue Jays are so many games down. How are they going to make up that ground? Well,
win every
freaking 11-game winning streak is how. Jesus. Meanwhile, the Yankees have lost 7 of their last 10, including 5 in a row. Although they're presently winning 8-5 in the middle of the 8th inning in Cleveland, as we are at this moment in time on our podcast recording.
If only the Orioles could have taken advantage similarly to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, like, I mean, the Orioles are actually behind the Rays right now, because the Rays are won 7 of their last 10 as well, and the Orioles have lost 6 of their last 10, so now they're behind the Rays, half game behind the Rays.
We can still laugh at the Red Sox.
We can still laugh at the Red Sox, who are 50 and 64. And Eduardo Rodriguez, who everyone was agonizing when the Orioles traded, you know, he's got a 4.83 ERA. And I believe, Alex, before we recorded, you said since his first 3 starts, he's posted like a 7 ERA.
Yeah, pretty much. Like 6.5. So.
That doesn't mean he won't turn it around next year or something, but... clearly, he was not going to help the Orioles last year or this.
Clearly, the starter that was inconsistent his entire minor league career.
What is
he's not going to stop being inconsistent once he gets to the majors.
He only would have stopped being inconsistent if they traded him to the Cubs.
Well, man, I saw saw an article headline today, just piling on to my despair. It was the Cubs have only like a good hard decision to make in whether Arrieta or Lester starts the wild card game. It's just so frustrating.
You know, Alex, if the Cubs were watching last year's AL wildcard game, I hope they know the answer is Jake Arrieta. You can't have John Lester do the one game when he never throws to first.
It's amazing. He still just never does it.
Today, he made his first throw to first since April. He made a throwing error!
Yeah.
The Brewers stole four bases in one inning.
The
Cubs won that game 9-2, but holy crap, dude. Like, how is that real? How would it, like, nobody know that before the AL wildcard game of last year?
It's just, like, something you just don't pick up. You don't, like, pick up on. Because he's a lefty, so you just, all right, he's a tough lefty. He's hard to steal on. We'll leave it at that. And it's like, oh, crap, the Royals just stole 9 bases or whatever.
Yeah, if he just sucked a little bit less at holding guys on base, maybe the Athletics would have won that game. It's like, I can't believe I just did that. Now I'm going to think about that the rest of the night, and I hate it already. You know, Alex, there was this one tweet that last year, I remember from last October very vividly, Jeff Sullivan from Fangraphs, who, of course, used to be on Lookout Landing, the SB Nation blog. And in the middle of the ALCS, in the middle of the storm of broken bats where they were just fluking their way into everything, freaking Royals, Jeff Sullivan tweets, "If that baseball had been hit to Josh Donaldson even 3 inches differently, none of this would have happened." And I was like, Jeff Sullivan, why do you make me think this? Literally inches, and if they hadn't blown that wild card game, the Athletics, over inches, it would have been a totally different scenario. Because, man, the Orioles could take Athletics, no problem.
At one point, wasn't that game like the A's hit like a 3-run home run, and they were up like 8-3 or something? And I basically turned it off until I saw later on Twitter what was going on. Now I'm thinking about that again. We already talked about the Diamondbacks series 2 years ago. This just sucks. Why can't they just be winning?
And I can think about the last year. It was 7-3 in the eighth inning.
Ugh.
7-3. Gave up 3 in the eighth, 1 in the ninth. Then the Athletics score in the top of the 12th, and the Royals score 2 more in the bottom. I'm doing my Tim Kurkjian impersonation over here without even meaning to. I'm not getting excited. My voice just up there, man, and I can't stop it. I'm just completely incredulous about it. I still am. I'm never going to get over it.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's been 19 years. I have not gotten over the freaking Jeffrey Mayer home run. And I'm never going to get over the Royals.
Nope.
Screw the Royals, man.
Nope. Be salty about it forever.
Screw them forever. And then the freaking media was like, oh my God, the Royals haven't won in forever. Well, they won in 1985. The Royals haven't won since 1983. Get out of here. You don't even have the right to that mantle.
Nope.
Okay. I can't talk about that.
Not at all.
Let's no more. No more of them. What else do we have to talk about?
Something else.
I guess
we can talk about Henry Urrutia.
Can we, though? No, but okay. So 4 games against the Athletics are coming up, and the Angels are going to be who the Orioles are chasing. Are going to be playing 4 games against those Royals. So here's where you can swing back. As bad as everything has been, if the Orioles if the Orioles can somehow win like 3 out of 4, and then the Angels lose 3 out of 4, well, they're back even with the Angels, just like that. Just like that. As bad as everything has been the last week.
Yeah, but again, like I was saying, I mean, you can concoct these scenarios where it's plausible, but at this point, what makes you think it's going
to
happen?
Right. You would have to get some switch that hasn't been flipped yet would have to get flipped for the Orioles. Multiple somebodies, really, would need to turn on offensive jets that they have not done yet. And
the pitching has to...
And then the starting rotation, needs to get better. And there's really no other options, because even if you think, okay... Well, Miguel Gonzalez is struggling, so we're going to kind of shuffle him into the bullpen and call up Tyler Wilson. He's got an oblique injury. He's on the DL.
Yep.
Mike Wright
Another
has
reason.
Got a calf injury. He's on the DL in the major leagues. They traded Zach Davies.
Yeah, that was about to say. Trading Zach Davies kind of hurts now when you have two injuries to both those guys
like,
back to
back.
Those
are three guys who you could probably say, okay, you know what? One of them is going to compete for like you know, the number five spot in the 2016 rotation. And they traded one of them, and then now, right now, the other two are injured. Not like serious injuries, but nonetheless, if they need someone right now, and they need to call somebody up that's a starter, like from AAA. Who's down there? You're getting Eddie Gamboa and his knuckleball, who has walked 77 batters in 99 in the third innings. So that's what you're getting.
Pretty much, at this point. I mean, there's nothing else. I mean, maybe that new Cuban guy, Ariel Miranda, who's been like decent at Bowie, but he's like,
yeah. What it might be is like they just traded for some random filler guy from the Reds, Matt Bushman.
Yeah, but it's yeah. I mean, yeah. I just there's certain it's not they're two games back. Of course, it's not without like outside the realm of possibility. It's two games, but it just. What about watching them informs you that that matters right now? Like, the fact that sure, it's only two games, but, like, they have to win. They have to win. They have to start winning games.
Yeah,
they have. But 50 left, 50-ish left.
Yeah, they've played, played 113,
sure,
so they've got 49 left.
49 left, so... I mean, if they start tomorrow, it's not too late, I guess, but it can't just be all September unless they just go crazy hot. But I don't know. I mean,
where's the hot streak going to come from? Is just what I don't know. I don't have an answer to that because the Orioles haven't shown me one yet.
Pretty much. I mean, that's where we're at. It's where we're at. They locked up a bunch of their roster and payroll in guys that have been, you know, way worse than they expected them to be.
I mean, just think of how much better this is than 4 years ago. But it's not so consolation anymore. Right. I've been to the ALCS, Alex. Well, I haven't. The Orioles.
Yeah.
I have been a fan of an ALCS team again.
It's one of those things where it's like, it's just like in like 2013 was like very frustrating. I was very frustrated from a lot of that year, but you know after the fact I was like, well, you know, it wasn't the end of the world.
You haven't broken the link of okay, we're in a good Orioles era right there. You know, you didn't. It wasn't a straight upward path from okay 20.
I'll still
2012 I'll ALDS still, 2014 ALCS. There wasn't you know, but
I'll still look back on this period and this year. You know, fondly.
Yeah.
They're still like a good enough, they're very flawed, but a good enough team.
On August the 13th, 2011, they were 45-72, 27 and a half games out of first place.
Yeah. I'm glad I don't have to watch that.
And that was after Buck was hired. That's Buck's first full season, and they still stunk.
Oh yeah.
So it's better.
2011 is when they started 2-16.
Yeah, that's no, that wasn't. Hold on, that was not. 2010, I think, was the 2-whatever.
Was it 2010?
I always remember I was driving around for like a Sunday day game. I'm gonna try and baseball. Yeah, because they did their West Coast trip or part of it early that year, and I was driving around on a. Oh, I guess it was a Saturday day game here. And they were in Oakland very early in the season. And it looks like it was Saturday, April the 17th. And they got walked off by Oakland to go 1-11. And I just remember this very well because I was in the car and I was listening on the radio as whatever happened for the walk-off. It looks like the losing pitcher was Jim Johnson, so who knows. But... whatever happened, and they got walked off. And then and Joe Angel on the radio was like, the Orioles lose again, and I am ready for a straitjacket. That's when they were 1-11 to start the 2010 season. And Joe Angel was ready for a straitjacket, and you know what? I was too. I was too, man.
Yeah, so times are better. We should remember that. But for now, I'm just going to be pissy about this year.
We expected better of this year when it began, and we're not getting it.
Yeah, I did. I really did. I just...
Like, what did I project? 89 wins? Like, and I knew I would regret that as soon as I made it. But
I was more than you. I think I said like 91 or 2 or something.
It's just, it was inconceivable, even for all that I am known for pessimism on Camden Chat, that all of the things that have gone wrong would have gone wrong.
Yeah. I don't think, I mean, you could sit around and say I told you so about all those outfielders, but I don't think anyone could have predicted all of them being this bad. Literally all of them. None of them has been anything. They've given you nothing, which is pretty hard to do. From almost 7 separate Major League Baseball players.
All of whom have shown reasonable levels of competence before.
I mean, you know, Diaza came over and was a good hitter for you, for the team for 2 months. That happened, you know. Then he was good in the playoffs. And then he started off the season well enough, and that was just terrible. And he had to get rid of him. Pierce was, you know, you could consider him almost an MVP, Orioles MVP last year. And then now he's a 200 hitter. You know, you could expect some reasonable amount of regression back to the norm for Steve Pierce, but this, I mean...
It's kind of the same thing as, to a lesser extent, you knew Chris Davis of 2014 wasn't going to be Chris Davis of 2013.
Yeah.
But you didn't think he was going to be bats 196 and then get suspended for using Adderall twice.
Yeah. And that's basically like that terrible of a scenario has reoccurred 5 times.
Yeah.
For the Orioles and 5 different players this year.
5 position players and then Bud Norris on the mound.
Yeah. Yep. It's funny. Bud seemed like a good guy.
Yeah, I'm sorry it didn't work out here. I would have liked
He was to... talking about how I mean, he even mentioned that like the contract year thing got to him a bit. Which makes sense, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
best of luck to him rebounding for the last couple months with the Padres out of their bullpen. And, you know, he seemed like a good dude.
Yeah. He definitely could have, if he had repeated his 2014 and 2015, he could have found himself a pretty nice contract. But he instead had the worst year of his career. Which sucks for Bud Norris.
It does.
The same thing. I was looking back at some of the old tweets, actually from 2013, and a lot were about Hamill. And Hamill kind of just like, if he had posted like a 2012 year that he had in 2013, he would have been up for like a good, nice multi-year, like last deal of his career. But then he sucked so bad that he finally got a multi-year deal from the Cubs this last year, but he was floating around on one-year deals because of, you know, how bad his 2013 was.
I mean, you know, that's the same sort of thing that made them trade for Parra this year happened with that year with, like, Hamill. Because if Hamill wasn't bad, okay, you don't need to trade for Feldman, or maybe you don't need to trade for Norris, one or the other.
Yeah.
It's, you know, in the aggregate, it's hard to knock that Norris one because, one... they got a great year out of him in 2014. And two, even if you're mad about the draft pick, well, guess what? If everything played out the same, which of course it wouldn't have, but the best we can do is assume it would have played out the same. The Orioles wouldn't have missed out on a pick in the mid-30s anyway, because if they still had that pick, that's what they would have lost when they signed Cruz. So,
is it?
Yeah, because it would have been, they would have lost their next highest pick because they signed Ubaldo, they gave up the first rounder. And then they would have lost. They traded to the Astros.
I think the competitive balance picks were.
Yeah, you just lose whatever is your next highest one, unless you're in the top 10 protected.
There you go.
So I mean, you know, it was moves they really had to make out of desperation. They kind of could have maybe worked out, but they didn't.
And it's one of those things. It's like we were talking about. I mean, before, like with players on your team, like sure the Orioles could have. If you're playing a video game, the Orioles could have sold at the deadline, but they were, what, one game, two games out around the deadline? And you're going to, like, walk up to Adam Jones and Manny Machado and tell him, like, well, nice, thanks for the effort, guys. I know you're one game out.
You're trying to sell tickets for August and September, and if you've already traded away, you know.
We don't believe in you anymore.
you know, that's gonna depress your attendance. And when you need your attendance to get money, so you have money to pay the next year's team, you know, you can't do it.
Maybe doing nothing would have been the best route, but I don't know. Zach Davies isn't going to really turn the needle for you, I don't think.
And even if he does, at least he's on the Brewers, so at most we'll see him one every 3 years.
Yeah.
Now and that I've said that, watch, I've set up like a 2017 World Series game where he like pitches a complete game shutout or something. But you know what? I would deal with that problem in 2017 if it meant the Orioles were, I knew, would be in the World Series 2 years from now. You know, I would take it.
I mean, what we were talking about before, Davies went from the Orioles' third best prospect to the Brewers' 11th best prospect.
As ranked by MLB.com, you're exactly right. Third best to 11th best. So what does that tell you? It tells you more about the Orioles system that he was third than it tells you about Zach Davies.
Yep. Yep. I mean, and he was probably one of their only tradable assets.
If you assume, okay, they can't or won't trade Harvey and Bundy because of their injury status.
Yeah, the injury status thing so destroyed them.
You can't trade Gausman. I don't believe they were really ever serious about wanting to trade Gausman. There were a couple rando that cool kids click on Twitter that was like, well, man, if Justin Upton was hitting it all, you know the Orioles would have traded Gausman to him on Gausman to the Padres for him. I was like, man, I don't know that I believe that. I think you're bringing
they would not. I don't think they would have. I mean, it's been pretty clear that Duquette, if he's going to protect anything in his farm system, it's the top line.
He got his top men, and anybody below that
is
he doesn't care.
Chum. Yeah, he really doesn't. And, I mean, it hasn't worked out horribly for him.
Right, so far it has not, because, you know, what kind of names has he traded? Well, okay, yes, Jake Arrieta, but that wasn't a farm trade. That was kind of a busted major leaguer trade.
That was basically a DFA trade. Like, he hadn't been DFA'd, but he was about to get DFA'd.
Well, he still had an option that year, but I think they knew his time was running out. But they traded, like, what was it, like Kyle Simon was in the Jim Thome trade, and that guy has been like suspended twice for drugs, and which I'm sure the Orioles didn't know, or, you know, who knows, maybe they did, but either way, man, you know, you don't miss him. They traded Nick Delmonico for Francisco Rodriguez, but that guy was a terrible Oriole, man. Let me tell you, you want to talk about trades where you knew, oh, he's having the best year of his career, traded to Baltimore, has two terrible months. Wow, who could have seen that coming, Alex? Who could have imagined? Your reliever, who's having the best year of his career, is going to come over the American League and suddenly regress in his small sample size. Couldn't have seen it coming. But, I mean, Nick Delmonico, like, I think he got suspended, and he was like, there was something weird where he, like, didn't even report to the spring training, and then they released him, and now he's, like, in the White Sox system, so even the team they traded him to didn't get to enjoy him. Like, those are the kinds of guys they've traded. They don't matter.
Pretty much. Like, the next best prospect they traded out there is probably, what, like, Josh Hader?
Yeah, Hader, maybe. And he's maybe, everybody seems to think he's, like, a future reliever because he's just, he's too funky. Of course, that's what everybody said about Chris Sale, and he's made it still, but...
Yeah, but Chris Sale also went straight from basically being drafted to the major leagues.
Right, Josh Hader was a high school draftee, and he's just plugging...
And a lot of
you know, good for him. Good luck for him. He's a Marylander. In fact, he went to the same high school as Stacy Fulcomer, so she's very much in his corner and was sad when they traded him for that reason, but... You know.
Yeah, I mean...
The Astros used him to get Carlos Gomez.
Yep, so now he's with the Brewers, too.
Not that he was the biggest name in that trade, but he was a name.
Yeah. So, I...
Alex, it's been an hour and 10 minutes or so. We have rambled our way around. There are no answers. We don't know the answer.
We have certainly rambled.
There's no answers. The Orioles just have to win some games, and they haven't yet, and maybe they won't. Maybe that's the fate of this year, and it could be worse. It could be on the way to another one of those years where, you know, where you remember in spring training where you're thinking, well, maybe, you know, this will be the year we get the 81 wins and break the streak of losing seasons. And then by the end of the year, you're like, man, I hope they don't lose 100 games. Only then it turns out maybe they should have lost 100 games and they would have gotten higher draft picks, which they probably would have ruined anyway. So What would?
Way to leave on an optimistic
I mean,
note.
like, you ever think about it? What, like, the freaking Nationals, man, were just so bad the 2 years they could get Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg, you know?
Yeah.
The two consecutive years. Not that Strasburg has been all that, but of course Bryce Harper has. Not that I can complain too much about the Harper draft either, since the Orioles got Manny Machado, but. I don't know that I have ever gotten this worked up on any one podcast before. Maybe it's been a while.
I don't know if I've, I don't know if I felt this. I don't even know.
It's yeah, the it's
despair.
Like
just despair.
Before
it's just,
they won,
the light?
Before they had winning seasons, I just didn't care enough to get worked out. Like I was sad, you know, but I wasn't like whatever I am right now, frustrated.
It was like, my frustration will be, you know, I'll tweet some snarky jokes and that'll be the end of it. Now it's like, I want them to be good. I liked the winning. I want that to stay.
It's just like it didn't have to be this way this year. You know, it wasn't fate that they're this. It was not an inevitable situation. It's just of the many possibilities, this is the one that has happened, and that makes it frustrating. Frustrating. So, Alex, do you have any final thoughts about the Orioles at this moment in time, August 13th, 2015, 10:45 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, as we are recording it?
Final thoughts, I guess they have, what do they got? They got a 10-game homestand coming up. They're going to move into September against the division, so I mean, I guess now is the time to try to make some hay if you can, if you're going to do it. I mean, you know, we were talking right after or right before the deadline. You know, they gotta, now's the time. They gotta start going, and it's still basically right there.
They're basically like
because
the
of
car
this
in the old movie that's just like stuck sputtering at the stoplight.
Pretty much.
And this black smoke,
you know, like
is coming out of the muffler.
Win one, lose one, kind of thing.
It ain't getting you into October. Well, it'll get you as far as October 4th, which is the end of the regular season, but it's not getting.
Hopefully, they, you know, rip off a nice 7-3 homestand, and then we can laugh about how depressed we were on the next podcast.
Go from there.
Or they just keep sputtering, and I'll look forward to some watching some people on September call-ups. Those are my two
Are there even
thoughts.
Any September call-ups that are going to be worth looking at? Maybe they'll finally call up Daryl Alvarez. I don't know.
Maybe Christian Walker.
Maybe Walker. Maybe we'll see a little more of Oliver Drake out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
I'm sitting over here making the wanking motion, Alex. There's no September call-ups. There is nobody walking through that door. The guys that are there right now have to do it.
Yeah. Pretty much. What about you? Any final thoughts?
I just want to see Gerardo Parra rebound enough that people don't say, man, that trade was terrible.
Yeah. That would be nice.
That's really what I would like to see. And, I mean, if he has a good last couple months, then you can say, well, you know, maybe they'll bring him back at a modest price and, you know, feel reasonably confident he will have reasonable production at a reasonable price for, like, 3 years or something like that. And, you know, if that's how it works out, that would be great. Because as we've seen, you don't want to go into the season with all of this outfield uncertainty again.
Yes.
You can't. They can't do it again.
No, that cannot be the plan
need,
2 years
you
in a row.
You need one guy other than Adam Jones. We're talking about corner outfield. You need at least one guy, you know, okay. We can go to war with him. And maybe he's not going to be, like, in the MVP conversation, but he'll be okay to good. That's what they need. That's what I'm looking for last couple months. Hope the Parra trade at least works out a little bit. And, well, Orioles Athletics coming up, and they're going to do what they're going to do. I hope it's good. I hope I don't hate them by the end of this 4-game series.
It's the A's. I never have any hope against the A's.
I know. It feels like they're bad against the A's all the time, even when they're not. But you remember the bad times and not the good times. So
that's true.
That's just the way it is. So that's about all the time we have for China. Actually, we have as long as we want, but we're going to stop now because we're just going to spare you us going on forever and ever.
Pretty much.
So as usual, make sure to bookmark us on CamdenChat.com, and literally every day you will find something about the Orioles, and every game you will find recapped, and every morning, every weekday, you will find some interesting aspect of the team being analyzed and broken down. You can read about Orioles minors. You can read about anything you want to do with the Orioles, all on CamdenChat.com, so check us out there. You can follow us on Twitter at CamdenChat. And you can follow Alex on Twitter himself. He is at AlexConwayCC. Did I get that right?
You did.
Yeah, AlexConwayCC. And you can like us on Facebook. There's so many crazy people on there. You will be entertained by their craziness. It is facebook.com/CamdenChat. Just don't try and talk to them because they're crazy. But you can admire
their,
admire their crazy from afar. Well, not really admire, but appreciate that there's something crazy happening from afar. It's kind of like a zoo, except zoos aren't really crazy, but just don't go through the glass. Don't bang on the glass either. It upsets them. Don't throw them food, but just look at them in their natural habitat and appreciate. So that's facebook.com/CamdenChat. Give us a like, and you will see when our articles are posted without even having to go to the site. Although, really, you should go to the site. As long as you're not crazy, you should sign up and join and comment with us, because we're cool. If I do say so myself. Well, that's all we have for tonight. For Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We're bringing you CamdenCast. This is Birdland, and we are out.